Of the Pack Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice to hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Packers podcast. It is not a victory Sunday, but nor is it a defeat Sunday. It is the bye week. Yes, the Green Bay Packers did not play this week, but this is show business, and the show must go on. I'm Jacob Westendorf here on kind of a sullen bye week for me. Neither the Green Bay Packers nor the Michigan Wolverines played this week, so I didn't have any football that I, quote, had to watch. But I still watched plenty today. Joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, what did you do to spend your bye week?
Man, I sobbed. Because I'm in the same boat as you, the ASU Sun Devils didn't have a game. It's like they took all the good football away all at once. Because maybe the football gods felt like we all needed to learn how to appreciate the game a little bit more. And so they're forcing us to do other things. I don't know. I bummed around, tried to think of some things to put up on the Cheesehead TV site that I write for, and I still haven't totally decided what it's going to be for tomorrow morning. So I'm hoping that our conversation tonight will kind of spur some ideas, but I'm ready to talk about the season that's been so far and what's coming up in this next week for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Next week, the Green Bay Packers will take on the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning against Aaron Rodgers, juicy matchup. Well, we're going to get to that a little bit later. First, what we're going to do, like we've told you since last week, this is the midseason, quote unquote, because it's not really the middle of the season, but bye week review. We're going to do some things from around the NFL, but this is a Packers show, so we're going to start with the Green Bay Packers, as we usually do. So some midseason review offensively. Packers got that fast start they were looking for. Mike McCarthy said he wanted a fast start after the last couple seasons, kind of limping into the start of the season. They'd started 1-2 each of the last three seasons. Aaron Rodgers, so far, is having what I would call a very good, just not a great season. He threw his first interception at home at Lambeau Field against the St. Louis Rams in 6,335 pass attempts or something along those numbers. That was a lot of passes was the point of that. The offense hasn't really gotten to play with its preferred unit. And you kind of knew that was going to be the case already with Jordy Nelson going down for the season. But even so, Devontae Adams hasn't played a full healthy game since week one against Chicago. Eddie Lacy's got something going on with him that I still can't completely explain. I'm not sure if it's a weight issue, if it's a conditioning issue, if it's an injury issue. Nobody's really saying a whole lot. Hopefully the bye week has done him some good. Randall Cobb hasn't been healthy all season. I think that's been clear. That shoulder that he injured in the preseason game against the Philadelphia Eagles continues to bother him. Ty Montgomery, Jeff Janis, they've had some pretty good showings early on for some younger players, which leads you to be excited about the offense. Jason, diagnose a little bit for me some of the issues offensively, and do you think this is a fixable issue?
Yeah, I don't really think there's many problems. We talked about it on the last show about how the offense kind of feeds off the defense. So if the defense is playing well and they're getting off the field and they're having success and they're rushing the passer and all the things are clicking on the defensive side, the offense just kind of tries to manage the game and work the clock a little bit. So I'm not trying to, you know, minimize the loss of Devontae Adams and going on with Eddie Lacy and some of the those problems, but I think a lot of it really centers around health, player health. And so I think they're going to be getting some of these guys back. I think Adams should be back this next week, hopefully. We'll get our first update on Wednesday of this week, and I know a lot of us will be kind of tuned and stuck on Twitter looking for the latest update, because I think we are kind of hoping to get quite a few different guys back. But I think they'll be fine, and, you know, we probably aren't going to spend a bunch of time talking about it today, and we don't have to because we did last week. I don't see the Packers making a move to acquire anybody. All the rumors, all the talk about Vernon Davis and Jared Cook and, you know, all these guys, that you know, a tight end that might be able to help the Packers if they can – they want to go all in. I think they'll be fine for this year. So really it just comes down to just getting all the pieces back. You know, you got Aaron Rodgers back there. So when 12 is healthy and he's throwing the football around, he can turn anybody into a playmaker, maybe not a Pro Bowler, but a playmaker. So I think they'll be fine. One of the biggest keys, I think, though, is and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, is Eddie Lacy. And I don't know if we want to just kind of skip straight to that and talk about him, because he's kind of been an enigma over the last couple of weeks with everybody wondering what's going on with him. As the weather starts to turn, I think the run game's going to have to turn it up a notch. James Starks looked good last week against the Chargers, but I don't know if that would carry on into the latter part of the season. So I think one of the biggest keys on offense is getting Lacy in that run game going.
Yeah, and one thing offensively I think that you can see as kind of a theme is any concern that is had seems to be, well, it's okay, you know, the receivers haven't played that well, but Devontae Adams is coming back. You know, the running game hasn't been as good, but Eddie Lacy hasn't hit a stride for whatever reason. He's playing with an injury, whatever the case may be. One position that doesn't have something along those lines, realistically, I mean, because Andrew Corliss, for all that he is, he's just an average role player. The tight end position leaves a little bit to be desired. One announcement from last week that we discussed was, you know, JerMichael Finley officially retired, and in what really amounts to about two full seasons, all of last year and a half year each year, so half of this year, half of the year that he got hurt, JerMichael Finley hasn't been adequately replaced. And that's no disrespect to Richard Rodgers. It was probably unfair to expect him to be anything close to that because his game just doesn't translate to that. You know, he ran a 4.88 at the combine, 4.87, something along those lines, you know, almost a 4.9 at the combine, and he doesn't play much faster than that. You know, he's got good hands, but there are some times where he's in the open field and he's trying to dance around small corners when really his thing should be, you know, you're a 265-pound tight end, lower your pads and run that guy over. That should be what he's trying to do, and he hasn't done that. He's a good red zone target, I think, and I think that's where his contribution to the team kind of ends. Andrew Corliss, same way. I don't expect any contribution from Justin Perillo, Mitchell Henry, or Kennard Backman at all this season. How concerned are you about the tight end position? I know a lot of people like to bring up that, you know, the Packers had a below-average starting tight end the year they won the Super Bowl with Andrew Corliss, but the difference that year is the wide receiver core was great. I mean, you had Greg Jennings, who was in the prime of his career. You had Donald Driver, who was still productive. James Jones, Jordy Nelson were productive players. The Packers have potential to have that kind of wide receiving core, but we haven't seen it yet. I think at best this season, you're looking at what can be a very good receiving core, but not a great one like that group in 2010. So any concern about the lack of playmaking ability at the tight end position?
No, not really. I think, you know, you have to take into consideration what the Packers have this year and what they don't have. What they have is Richard Rodgers, who continues to grow, and I know he's had his struggles. He had a pretty rough outing against the Rams. Didn't have a good game there, and his blocking still needs to develop, and he's not a burner. So what they don't have is JerMichael Finley. JerMichael Finley is, you know, he's officially done now. He's retired. And so he's not coming back. They don't have that type of a tight end, but with the dynamic, you know, diverse group of receivers that the Packers have, you've got the Randall Cobb type, you've got the James Jones. When Nelson comes back next year, you get Nelson back, you've got Montgomery, you've got Devontae Adams. I think they're fine with who they have at tight end. I mean, Justin Perillo made a nice catch last week, and he can possibly come in and help out a little bit. My only concern is whether or not the league is going to take any action against Corliss for when he comes back and suspend him for the off-season issues that he had 4th of July weekend with the firearm in Miami. So I don't know what the scoop is there, and you'd have to expect if the league is going to take some action that it's going to be at least a couple games. So, you know, then you've got – you're relying a little bit more on Perillo and Kennard Backman as well. You know, Backman is a guy who I think started to kind of contribute. The light bulb started to kind of go off in practice towards the end of training camp. And he, like most other rookies, is having to kind of prove his way onto the field through special teams and in his practice every week. And as a matter of fact, I think he's only been active for one game so far. I could be wrong there. But he hasn't quite gotten himself into the rotation yet. So I'm not going to be too concerned again because it's the offense with Aaron Rodgers, and they've been able to score enough points despite whatever the narrative is in every game, and they've won different ways. So not a huge, huge area of concern, but, you know, obviously the depth is starting to get a little bit thin, so we hope there's no injuries. If there's an injury, then obviously that changes everything completely.
And that depth that you speak of should be better this week. Again, we'll find out Wednesday, but it sounds like Devontae Adams is going to be good to go coming back this week. Randall Cobb has a full week to, well, really 2 weeks before he has to play the Denver Broncos. Ty Montgomery, we'll see. That might be the only receiver that is inactive on Sunday when they take on the Denver Broncos. Early in the season, the Packers made one offseason addition after the post-training camp cuts. And this has become a weekly trend on our show, and I can't, even though they didn't play today, I have to go through it because it really has been a really good story for the Packers offense this year. I often wonder where the offense would be if this guy wasn't here. But, Jason, we say it every week. All James Jones does
is catch touchdowns.
Six touchdown receptions for James Jones in the Packers' first six games. For those of you math majors, which I am not, that is one touchdown a game, which is impressive no matter what way you try and slice it. Now, I think eventually down the road, James Jones is going to become a bit more of a role player. I think the return of Devontae Adams is going to help. And, you know, Devontae, I think, is a guy that a lot of people have forgotten about. You know, Packers fans are worrying about wide receivers, and we're talking about how, you know, well, can Jeff Janis make the transition, and can he bring the offense back to life? Or, you know, is Ty Montgomery going to continue to improve? Or, hell, can we get Jared Aberderis in the lineup, and maybe he can do something? And while we're talking about those things, we're forgetting this is the guy that was the Packers' offseason MVP, according to Mike McCarthy. Aaron Rodgers said this guy was going to be a star. He has had nothing but good things to say about Devontae Adams. Adams has had an okay start to his season. You know, he had four catches against the Bears. I think he had four against the Seahawks, and then he hurt his ankle. You know, and he hasn't been the same since. Or he hasn't been really active since. He was active for one series against the Kansas City Chiefs, and then he exited after re-aggravating that ankle injury. So I want to talk about Devontae Adams. That was kind of the spark of the show. Those of you that listened to the intro, you know, Jason and I have drooled over this touchdown a million times over. I watched it again this week just because I forgot what the guy even looked like. But the touchdown against the Dallas Cowboys, that was what Devontae Adams can bring to this offense. A presence on the boundary, somebody that can make plays after the catch, which, you know, a lot of people want to talk about the shot play, things of that nature. But the reality is the Packers have a different offense this year. I think it's more based on yards after the catch, which is good. That's fine. But they need guys that can do that. And they need someone on the boundary to take away some attention from Randall Cobb so he can do those things. I think Devontae Adams is that guy. I think the offense is going to be fine when Devontae Adams comes back. And I think you'll see that, maybe not right away, because the Denver Broncos do have a really good secondary and a really good pass rush. But Devontae Adams is going to figure something out at some point this year. You don't have a camp like we had, like he had, and then just do nothing during the regular season more often than not, especially somebody that is as talented as I think he is and as a lot of people really think he is. When we had Marcus Ebersole on the show, which was after the Jordy Nelson injury, he said if you didn't look at the number and the obvious differences between the two players and accomplishments, if you just took the number for what it was, 17 had a more impressive camp than number 87. Now, nobody's going to sit here and say that Devontae Adams is better than Jordy Nelson. However, that's an impressive statement regardless of what the case is. So what do you think Devontae Adams can do this offense? Because, you know, we mentioned star fantasy guys. I told those guys, you know, take Devontae earlier than you thought you were going to because I thought he was going to have a really big year. Hasn't been able to do that, but he also hasn't really been active for most of the game. So talk about Davante Adams and what you think that he can do for the offense going forward.
Well, assuming that there isn't something weird that we don't know about with his ankle injury because it's taken him a while to come back. I mean, I don't think there is. I think it's just a straightforward ankle injury. He tried to play week three against the Chiefs after he hurt his ankle against the Seahawks in week two. He lasted one series, came out, and we haven't seen him on the field since. So I think push came to shove, and the bye week situation was a little bit different. There's a possibility we may have seen him against the Chargers. And I know that Mike McCarthy said they're not going to hold players out. If they're healthy, they're going to play. But I think they were kind of really throwing caution at the, you know, at the fact that ankle injuries can be kind of tricky. And I think they were giving him a little bit extra time to heal. So I think he'll be back. And the fact that he had a little bit extra time to heal, I think Davante Adams comes back and hits the ground running. I'm not as concerned about him being effective physically and his ankle being better. I think it's more going to be that timing and chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. You know, he's now missed, four games, the better part of four games, so in 5 weeks total. So the tough thing there is getting back into it. You know, it takes you maybe a half of football before you get back into it. The speed of the game kind of catches up, and then you kind of get everything going. And they're going up against a good Denver defense, a good Denver secondary this next week. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think if Davante Adams doesn't come in and light it up right away against Denver that we should all be concerned that he's not the player that he was and that, you know, there's more to it than just, you know, he's coming back and he happens to be drawing a tough defense on the road. So, but Davante Adams is definitely going to be somebody that Aaron Rodgers is going to look for. He's talked, you know, Rodgers spoke very highly about him. He's going to try to get him the ball. And I think by the time the season's over with, we're all going to be thanking goodness that he did come back and that the injury wasn't more serious, because I think he's going to be a big key part to this offense. You mentioned the shot play, Jacob. You know, honestly, I don't know when we want to be done talking about this, and I'm not saying us personally or that we've talked about it too much. Everybody's talking about the deep ball. The Packers have found ways to get in the end zone without the deep ball. I mean, the little shovel pass to Jeff James went for 40-plus yards. They're finding ways to get big plays other than having Aaron Rodgers chuck it downfield 50 yards. So, you know, I don't necessarily know if that's what Adams is going to bring to the table. He may. But, you know, we saw Ty Montgomery almost make that play against the San Francisco 49ers. They have a couple guys that can do it. Adams coming back certainly won't hurt the opportunity to try to get some other guys working. I think that's, you know, he's going to open things up for other people. And Adams himself is by the time the playoffs roll around, don't be surprised if he's right up there kind of neck and neck with James Jones in terms of how many touchdown catches each of these guys has.
He will have a stiff test waiting for him Sunday night. Chris Harris, arguably the best corner in all of football, will likely be the one assigned to him, depending on how they want to game plan that. But either Chris Harris or Aqib Talib will be covering Davante Adams more often than not. So good stiff test for the guy coming back off of that. One thing I think that the return of Davante Adams does as well that I didn't get to is his presence on the boundary. What you've seen with the Packers is guys are playing outside of their comfort zone, so to speak. Now, the Packers, they always say that they want the receivers to be able to play all the positions, X, Y, Z, all that kind of stuff. Realistically, the Packers have receivers perfectly fitted for roles. James Jones is a boundary receiver. He's not going to burn by anybody in the slot. He's going to catch the underneath stuff. He's going to be a target in the red zone. Davante Adams, boundary receiver, can beat you down the field if he needs to. Intermediate stuff, things of that nature. Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb are slot players. Ty Montgomery has had to play outside due to some injuries. I think he's going to have an impact. Everybody on this receiving corps is going to benefit with the return of Davante Adams because they aren't going to have to play out of position anymore. We'll see if Jeff Janis or Jared Aberderis is able to crack the lineup as well. One thing I've speculated is if Jeff Janis is able to continue to improve, then that athleticism has to find a way on the field at some point, I think. And the Packers may use receivers similarly to the way a lot of teams do defensive linemen. And I don't mean that you're going to see like one series with Cobb, Adams, and Jones, and then the next series see Aberderis and Janis and James Jones for the hell of it. You know, I just think that they'll have some packages, some moving parts and things of that nature, maybe get a little more diverse with their formations, which is something that Mike McCarthy was very good at early in his tenure in Green Bay, and he's kind of deviated from it with this no-huddle attack. It's something I would like to see is, one, getting players back where they're comfortable, two, a little more diversity in the formations. Defensively, that's the surprise of the season so far. I don't think you can argue that. You know, a lot of people, you and I both, really We really expected the defense to go through some growing pains. Young corners, Tremont Williams gone, Devon House gone, really replaced by two rookies, and Casey Hayward, who hasn't played outside as much. Realistically, the Packers have had one below-average game against Chicago and one bad game against the San Diego Chargers, where they gave up a lot of yards but not a lot of points. They did that in both those games, but they won both of them. Otherwise, the defense has been very good, and some games they've been dominant. The St. Louis Rams game, they only gave up 10 points. They forced four turnovers. I think they sacked Nick Foles about every other play in that game. Kansas City, they were very good on defense as well. In Seattle, they finally exercised that demon a little bit, and they were absolutely dominant against Colin Kaepernick and the San Francisco 49ers, which is something they weren't able to ever do. What I want to start with, obviously, I think the biggest story is obviously the young corners. Demarius Randle has played very well. He's the one who's gotten the most playing time. Quentin Rollins and his extended playing time got two interceptions against the Rams, kind of bounced in and out of the lineup there. Sam Shields has played well for the most part. Didn't play that well. I think Keenan Allen just caught another pass. Nobody could guard him on that team. But for the most part, Casey Hayward's played well when he's moved the slot. Safety play's been pretty good, and that's a safety group that hasn't had its key communicator. No Morgan Burnett for five of the first six games of the season, and they're probably going to get him back when they play the Denver Broncos as well. How good can this defense be, specifically in the secondary, is where I want to start.
Well, I think the secondary has been a bright spot, and I know we're going to talk more about some of the contributions they've gotten from the young guys. So Morgan Burnett can only make it better. He plays very well in run support. He's a great quarterback back there, the communication, the getting everybody lined up, and he can blitz. And they haven't been getting the production from the secondary in the pass rush since Burnett's been out. What we were used to seeing last year, he's only played one game this year, so really there hasn't been much of an opportunity to see a drop-off because there really has been zero so far. I think the secondary benefits greatly from getting Burnett back, and especially with the loss of Sean Richardson. Chris Banjo, to me, is most valuable to this team as a special teams player. When I see him back there at safety, I just get nervous. You know, he almost had the interception. I think it was against the Rams, or I think he almost had one against the Chiefs, the game that we were at in week three, and just couldn't reel it in. But he's just not, you know, what you want to see back there. So with Richardson out, the depth is kind of short, and they need him back. So I think he's a big piece there. We know the rookies are good. The secondary, they'll continue to get better and improve with more experience. And as they play tougher opponents, and they're going to get two quick tests coming out of the chute here with the Denver Broncos next week and then the Carolina Panthers the week after, both of those games on the road in hostile environments, and we could possibly be looking at teams that are still unbeaten. So that's going to only help them, I think. And B.J. Raji coming back is a big key. I wrote my Saturday scoop piece on Cheesehead TV, and one of the biggest keys I said the Packers need to finish off the season strong and coming out of the bye week is they need B.J. Raji back because he was such a big force up front in the defense, kind of helping clog lanes and getting a push on the pocket there. The defensive line was actually getting some good penetration. It seems like once or twice a game they're just blowing up a running play, which is a nice change compared to seasons past where they've struggled to stop the run and have had problems with running backs. You know, they had a couple weeks in the beginning of the season where they bottled up some really good backs. So the defense is on track. I think they're going to be doing some really good things. I'd like to see a little bit more from Julius Peppers, although, you know, when I went back and looked at the stats, Peppers has quietly been very effective. You know, he doesn't make the big splash plays. He hasn't had any pick sixes like he did last year. But he's still, I think he's one of the team leaders in sacks, and he's quietly producing. Mike Neal has stayed healthy. He's actually been pretty good. We don't hear his name mentioned too much. Sounds like Nick Perry's going to get a chance to come back. So I think the sky's the limit for the defense. They're playing with a lot of confidence. Clay Matthews is playing like we all want to see and hope that he would. He's definitely earning every penny of that contract, taking one for the team, playing the middle linebacker, spending time in the middle versus just being on the outside. So many reasons to be optimistic. Speaking of the inside linebackers too, I mean, Nate Palmer's been okay. You know, I think he's earned his reps, and I want to see more Jake Ryan too. I know that you and I are biased, Jacob. You're a Michigan fan, and I like Ryan coming in because they had to find an answer to the departure of A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones. Now, A.J. Hawk was a good player, so let's not, you know, make too many jokes about Hawk. He fell off in the last few years of Green Bay, but replacing someone like that is not just as simple as snapping your fingers. So I think we have a lot to look forward to. And again, the injuries are going to be important to avoid. I mean, hopefully the worst is behind them because they really can only afford so many. And they've, you know, been lucky that the impact players that have gotten hurt are guys that are going to be able to return, with the exception of Nelson. So stay healthy. But, man, this defense is exciting, and I think they're going to continue that upward trend. And, you know, like we saw in 2010, they went to the Super Bowl as one of the top five defenses in the league. Don't be surprised if by season's end the Packers aren't in that discussion or in that bucket.
You kind of made my transition for me there. You wanted to talk about the pass rush. You mentioned Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers actually leads this team in sacks. He has 5.5 sacks, according to Packers.com. Behind him is Clay Matthews with 4.5. You got Nick Perry with 3.5. Going through this a little bit more, you've got Mike Daniels. He has 3. Jay Elliott has 2. Mike Neal has 2. I mean, they are getting production in the pass rush from a wide range of people, and that's something they haven't been able to do. For the most part, even in 2010, if the Packers were getting sacks on the quarterback, it was Clay Matthews. The difference with that team was they got pressure up front. Colin Jenkins was fantastic that season, pushing the pocket up the middle. B.J. Raji had a big year with 6.5 sacks that year, but they have 23 sacks currently total. Julius Peppers, 5.5 of those. That guy's incredible. To me, he's found the fountain of youth. You want to talk about the linebacker core, you know, Clay's playing the middle, doing some things with the middle pressure, gets to play outside. Joe Thomas has been a good addition, allowing Matthews to play outside as a coverage linebacker. You mentioned Jake Ryan. I'm never going to argue with getting him on the field. He was one of my favorite players, and he was at Michigan. Not much has changed there. The Packers are getting pass rush from a lot of people, and that's always going to be a good thing to see, especially when you run a 3-4 defense, which the Packers do. They're getting a lot of sacks up front. One guy I do want to talk about, because he doesn't have the flashiest of numbers, according to the Packers website, Daytone Jones only has 1 sack for the Packers, but it just seems like he makes a disruptive play per game, and that's a guy who, you know, they said Tony Pauline's a scout, very well renowned. A lot of people respect his opinion, and he said that you'd have to be patient with Daytone Jones. Well, the Packers have been patient. He missed the first game of the season with a drug suspension, and that was unfortunate, but ever since he's come back, he's been very productive. He made 2 of the biggest plays of the game in that Chargers game, tackle on the goal line, sacking Phillip Rivers. That was big time by him. He's been an excellent addition. This defensive line, we've talked about it before, you know, B.J. Raji looks to be back to his old form, which is good to see. But Troy Guyon is a good rotational player. Daytone Jones has been, I would call him a stud in nickel situations. Mike Daniels is a GAM, which means grown-ass man, according to Packers post-game show, among various other things. And it's an acronym I like to use, too. But Mike Daniels is the best defensive lineman on the team, and I haven't even talked about him yet. This Packers defensive line is the deepest it's been in quite some time, and they're going to need that going forward, especially next week with that whole Denver atmosphere, players needing air, things like that. The Packers, I think, are going to be rushing the passer a lot because the Broncos haven't really run the ball well, and Peyton Manning likes to get the ball out of his hands quick. But one way you beat him is putting pressure in his face, so the defensive line is going to have to be big next week. I think they can do that. I think they will do that, and we'll talk about that more when we get to the Denver preview portion of the show. This is the team midseason awards portion of the show, so what I want to do is go through some of our awards, so to speak. Offensive and defensive MVPs, I feel like those are obvious. That's Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews. So what I want to do is pick someone else, you know, outside of the obvious for those, because realistically, that's just who it's going to be. Unless you have an argument for me that I don't know about, which you can feel free to say when I give you your chance to talk here. But for me, my offensive MVP is going to be James Jones. And I think it's crazy that you're saying that. That's a guy that wasn't even on the roster until Tuesday, the first week of the season. That wasn't a lot of time to get back in sync. But, I mean, like I said, the guy hasn't been here that long, and it's a weekly segment on our show. All James Jones does is catch touchdowns. And, I wonder where this offense would be if James Jones wasn't around. So other than Aaron Rodgers, my offensive MVP is going to be James Jones. Defensively, I think he can go a lot of different ways. I'm going to go with Mike Daniels because his emergence early in the year, he didn't play that well against Chicago Bears, and then he's played well pretty much every week since then. And the Packers' defense has been very good in those games. Mike Daniels is going to get paid a lot of money this winter by somebody, and I really hope it's the Packers, and I think it will be. But Mike Daniels is the best defensive lineman on this team. I think he's the most valuable player on this team, not named Clay Matthews. There's certainly other candidates. You can go a lot of different ways with that, but I'm going with Mike Daniels. So my guys are James Jones and Mike Daniels. Jason, the non-obvious MVPs, what do you got?
I'm going to go crazy on offense. No one is going to see this one coming because it's not a sexy pick. But if I can't go Aaron Rodgers, you've already picked James Jones. I'm going to go Josh Sitton because nobody gives offensive linemen any love. And Josh Sitton, I mean, the last time he gave up a sack on Aaron Rodgers, I believe George W. Bush was still in office. So, I mean, unsung hero, guy that's been with the team for a long time. He's, I think, the Packers' best offensive lineman. And we take those guys for granted because they just show up and do work every week. And nobody probably gets less looks or credit than Sitton because we all just kind of expect him to be good, just like we expect Aaron Rodgers to be great every week. So I want to give a little bit of love to Josh Sitton and really appreciate what it is that he does because, you know, the Packers, they have them locked up. I believe all the linemen are locked up through at least next season or the 17th season. But, I mean, it's eventually going to come time where the Packers are going to have to look at replacing some of these guards. I mean, Sitton's the oldest offensive lineman by 2 years, and then Bulaga came in 2010. I think Sitton was drafted in 08. I mean, he certainly can play. He's a tough guy. He played through that toe injury last year, so I don't think his departure is imminent, but not a guy that the Packers are going to easily replace. So he's my offensive MVP. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to go ha-ha Clinton Dix at safety because he seems to lead the team in tackles every week. He's been so good in run support with Burnett out. He's progressed from year two to year one, he's made that jump. He's made some really big plays. He had the really nice interception in the end zone against the Rams late to kind of help seal that. He punched the ball out on Melvin Gordon last week, made a big play after he had a pass interference penalty just prior. So, you know, didn't let that affect his play. He's really done a lot of things that people thought would take him longer to do at the safety position. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't the first safety taken last year. The Packers kind of got lucky that he was available when they drafted, and there he was, and so they picked him. You know, Calvin Pryor, I don't know what Calvin Pryor's numbers look like in New York for the Jets, but I'm wondering if maybe they wish they had a guy like Ha-Ha back there at safety. So he's been a great addition to the defense. He's one of the reasons why they've been able to maintain their continuity. I mean, we remember the days of when it was Jerron McMillan and M.D. Jennings starting at safety, which just saying that, I think I just yacked a little. Yeah, I mean, I think I just threw up a little bit by mouth. So, you know, those are my two. Josh sitting on the offensive side and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix on the defense for sure. Looking forward to some more good stuff from both of those guys throughout the rest of the season. Obviously don't want to see either one of them get hurt because they're key.
Jason, this is why you are my homie, and I am disappointed in myself because I am a former left guard, and I love it when the big guys get love. And I myself did not do that, so I'm disappointed with myself. Biggest surprise, biggest disappointment for the Packers. To me, the biggest surprise is the young cornerbacks. Like I've mentioned before, I did not expect them to play this well. I told you guys at the beginning of the season I thought Quentin Rollins would become a contributor by the end of the season. I did not expect Quentin Rollins and Demarius Randall both to pass every test, as it seems they have so far. A couple rookie mistakes here or there from each guy. But it seems like the last two games, they made the two biggest plays of the game. Demarius Randall, obviously, with the pass breakup against the San Diego Chargers, and then Quentin Rollins with the pick six of Nick Foles that really puts the Packers up two possessions, a lead that they never relinquished. So the young corners are exciting. I think that the Packers are in an excellent negotiating position with Casey Hayward. If Casey Hayward wants to come back for slot corner money, then I believe the Packers would welcome him back. But if he decides he wants to try and be a boundary corner and some team's willing to pay him boundary corner money elsewhere, then the Packers are really in a good spot to allow him to walk, which is something you couldn't say at some of the other positions they had last year. Randall Cobb comes to mind, for example. Biggest disappointment so far, and we've talked about him a lot, that's Eddie Lacy. One of the things I liked about this offense so much this year is I thought the offensive line continuity paired with the lethal passing game that I expected would really open up the running game. And early in the year, the Packers were third in the league in rushing. But since then, Eddie Lacy's been really a non-factor. Obviously a non-factor in the Seahawks game because he was hurt. He was a okay player against Kansas City Chiefs. It was obvious he was still limited. He was good against the San Francisco 49ers, but the last 2 weeks he hasn't done anything. And I don't know if that he's hurt, if he's overweight. I've mentioned it. You know, I don't know what the deal with Eddie Lacy is. But, Jason, you talked about it earlier. Later in the season, it's going to get cold. And one of my favorite, for those of you that have been to Lambeau Field this season, you've seen the pregame video before they do the introductions. One of my favorite photos of that is from last year's New England Patriots game. They've got Lacy lined up in the backfield, and you can just see the cold air coming from his breath. That, to me, is December football at Lambeau Field. You know, I'm a firm believer that you have to throw the ball to score, and you run after you've scored enough to kind of run out the clock. However, December football is line it up, run the ball down their throat. I think the Packers are going to have to be able to do that, especially with this new offense that really relies on efficiency, you know, not a lot of big plays, things of that nature. I think the Packers are going to have to be able to run the ball, and with all due respect to James Starks is not Eddie Lacy. So, Ed, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, figure out whatever it is your deal is, and let's get rolling, because I really think Eddie Lacy is going to be a key cog to getting the Packers to the Super Bowl, if that's where they're going to go this season. Jason, biggest surprise, biggest disappointment?
Okay, so biggest surprise so far this year, I'm going to go with Dayton Jones. We already talked about him, but there was, I mean, two seasons, not a whole lot from him, 13-14. He's a former first-round pick. You know, he and Demaryius Randall and even Nick Perry, if you think about it, 12-13-14, you know, haha, Clinton Dix. These guys are actually starting to change the narrative on Ted Thompson's, you know, drafting prowess in the first round, because they're starting to show up and play, albeit maybe a year later than the Packers would have liked to have seen. But Dayton Jones, like you said, disruptive. I mean, he had that penalty a couple plays prior that actually gave took the Packers. Or actually, I'm trying to think. I think he had a penalty that moved Seattle into field goal range, or it was an impactful penalty. And then a couple plays later, he makes that stuff in the backfield, and then he gets the sack on Rivers, which is huge. I mean, that's what I like about this Packers team is they've got that short memory, and you want it. I mean, with Josh Boyd going down, and Boyd was only going to be a role player, but that's one less guy you can rotate in on the defensive line. You know, with Guyon still kind of coming back and getting his feet, you know, under him. Dayton becomes really important. You know, he missed the first week against the Bears because of suspension. Hopefully he can stay healthy and stay out of trouble, because even if he's only going to make one or two big plays a game, that's all the Packers really need from each of those guys. You know, if each of those guys makes one or two a game, they're going to do really good things on defense. So my biggest surprise has been Dayton Jones, because he's been fantastic. And as far as disappointments go, I mean, you know, I kind of think about this one, because even when I write my game balls and lame calls, I struggle every week to try to, you know, find a lame call, because even though some guys make some rough plays, and when you're 6-0, it's, you know, it's tough to say that there's been a lot of badness going on in the field, but it's been really difficult for me to find somebody who's consistently been, you know, kind of disappointing. I mean, maybe 1 week somebody disappoints, but the next week they're right back at it. You know, Sam Shields had the rough week one. Since then, he's been pretty good. I thought about maybe throwing Micah Hyde in there because he's just getting beat so much in coverage, but he's made a few plays as well, so I don't necessarily know if you give him a whole disappointment nod. So I'm going to go with maybe some of the low-hanging fruit, and I'm going to qualify this by saying that, yeah, I'm not really that disappointed in him, but I got to pick somebody for the purpose of this discussion. So I'm going to go with punter Tim Mastay, because Mastay's had his struggles, and his average is actually not that bad. You know, his net and his average are okay. They're on par with other punters in the league. He's just had his troubles this year, and he has had some terrible shanks. And this is a guy who supposedly works really hard at his craft and really tries to, you know, get better and improve and takes it seriously. And there's some guys that have referred on his team, teammates that have referred to him as a little weird. And you kind of like that in a punter. I remember when they had John Ryan here, and John Ryan's a little weird, if you ask me. But for a punter, maybe you need that sometimes. So I'm going to go with Mastay just because, you know, they brought in some competition for him early in the season. He wasn't able, he shook that off relatively quickly, so much so that they cut Cody Mandel before training camp was even over with. You know, and Mastay's done well on the holding front, and I think that might have been why he secured the job initially. You know, do I think the Packers need to go in a different direction? No. But I think that he could be better, and they're going to need him to be better. In the cold weather with field position so important, they're not going to be able to afford him shanking one off of the side of his foot. And, you know, he has trouble punting right. He's better punting left. Well, you know what? Sometimes you're going to end up on the left hash. You're going to have to punt it right. You're going to have to kick away from the return guy. And you don't want to kick a line drive and give them a chance to return one, because as they start playing these really good teams, you get into the playoffs, every team's going to have a good returner. Every team's going to have good special teams. You can't afford those kind of mistakes. So for me, it's Mass Day on the disappointing side. But again, you know, I wouldn't trade him for anybody else right now, and I think it's a good problem to have that I had to dig one up there and find somebody to put on the list.
Yeah, realistically, with a 6-0 team, it is kind of hard to find disappointments. Final thing on the Packers, X factor going forward. So what's the thing that's the key that's not really, you know, for obviously Aaron Rodgers is going to play well. You know, other players are going to play well. So what is the X factor going forward that'll be – could be the difference between Green Bay playing in the Super Bowl or us sitting here talking about the offseason early in January. For me, it's that pass rush. You know, I know I've talked about the young corners and how well they've played, but realistically, they're going to have some struggles at some point. That's just how that position works. You struggle at some point or another when you play cornerback in the National Football League. That pass rush has been fantastic. 23 sacks from a variety of different guys. Now, I'm not so much worried about Clay Matthews. I'm worried about his health because he does seem to get dinged up from time to time. But as far as elite-level play goes, he's the one most likely to maintain that. Everyone else, you can find a legitimate concern. Is Julius Peppers going to be 36-year-old Julius Peppers by the end of the season instead of 26-year-old Julius Peppers? Can Jayron Elliott continue to make plays? Can Mike Neal continue to make plays? Can Nick Perry continue to make plays or stay off the injured list, which is another story in itself? It seems like whenever he builds any momentum, that's when he gets hurt. So mine is the pass rush and continuing to find a variety of guys to get after the quarterback, because if it is just Clay Matthews, you can game plan for that. And we've seen teams do it, and it doesn't go so well for the Packers when that happens. See 2011, late parts of 2012. When you can just game plan for one person, they find a way to stop that one person. The Packers, what's helped them early in the season, it's a variety of guys. And with some of the quarterbacks they're going to face, you're talking – NFC East is kind of a wash. I have no idea who's going to win that division, and we'll talk about that here in a minute too. But, you know, Cam Newton, you're going to have to get after him. Matt Ryan, you're going to have to get after him. If the Cowboys figure out a way to make the playoffs, Tony Romo, same thing. Carson Palmer, Russell Wilson. You saw what happened to Nick Foles when you get after him if the Rams figure out a way to win that division. That pass rush is going to be a big thing for the Packers, because you do figure at some point they're going to score. Other teams are going to have to find a way to score with them. And if they sit back and have all day to throw, then the Packers are going to struggle, and it's going to be hard to stop teams that way. So my X factor for the team is that pass rush. Figure out ways, Nick Perry, Mike Neal, guys like that, to continue to make plays. Jason, what's your X factor?
Well, mine's kind of weird because I want to say it's the run game, but you know what? The Packers are actually the fifth best rushing team in the league right now. They're averaging just under 130 yards a game. And that's with Eddie Lacy being a huge question mark. So I guess, in essence, my X factor is Eddie Lacy, who was your most disappointing player. And I think you say that from the standpoint of he hasn't been available and hasn't done what we hoped that he would. We don't necessarily think players don't try to get hurt, so it's not his fault that he hurt his ankle. But Eddie Lacy's getting going and taking on the bulk of the load for the rest of the season, to me, is so key, because the Packers are going to have to run a little bit more. When I say balance it out, I don't mean 50-50. I mean, let's be realistic. The Packers are never going to be a 50-50 team with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. But to see Lacy get those typical percentage of carries towards the end of the season, you know, Bill Johnson on Green and Gold today, they played Skeptic or Believer. One of the questions late this week was, hey, do you think that Eddie Lacy is going to get the bulk of the carries for the rest of this season? And Johnson not only said yes, but he also said that Lacy was going to put up 1,000 yards this year when it's all said and done, which at this point is, you know, a pretty bold statement because, yeah, they got 10 games left, but, you know, Lacy's had such struggles and he just can't seem to break one and find ways to burst through the hole. So to me, it's Eddie Lacy getting the ground game going and his production, because last season, and of course in 2013 when they had to lean on him when Aaron Rodgers missed 8 weeks with the collarbone injury, Eddie Lacy was not only rushing well, but he was getting into the end zone. So that's point production. That's not just yardage. That's point production. And I think the Packers are really going to need that from him in moving forward. And hopefully, you know, I don't know what the severity of that injury was. There's been some talk about his weight and whether he's out of shape or he's just too bulky and is putting too much weight on his ankles, he's going to have to find a way to, for himself to be able to heal from that ankle injury and do the right things to get himself back and still be able to run hard. I mean, if he's honestly going at 250, 260 at running back, I mean, that's a lot. That's a load. And I know Jerome Bettis did it, but, you know, Bettis had a different body makeup and physicality to him. So, for me, the big X factor is going to be Eddie Lacy, and I'm going to cross my fingers that starting this week in Denver, man, if he comes back and has a big week against the Broncos, a lot of good things are going to start happening for the Packers offense for sure.
Absolutely. Now we're going to go to the around the league. Since Packers didn't have a game this week for us to recap, and we will preview the Denver game briefly before we close off here, but NFL midseason review that we have here. Again, surprise and disappointment type question. Team-wise, what's been the biggest surprise and the biggest disappointment? For me, the biggest surprise has been the Carolina Panthers. Currently, they're leading the Philadelphia Eagles, and if they win that game, they're 6-0 undefeated. Excuse me, I think that, yeah, that'll make them 6-0 going into next week. And that is surprising to me because I had no idea who the hell they were going to throw the ball to, and more so, I didn't know who was going to block for them. So the Panthers have definitely been a surprise. They're first place in that division, and right now that makes that road game against Carolina even bigger because if the Packers are able to win next week against Denver and Carolina wins, that could be the game that decides home field advantage throughout the NFC because we've been talking about that Arizona game since the schedule came out. The Carolina game could be it too. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. But Carolina definitely been a surprise because I have no idea how Carolina is doing it. They get a production from a lot of guys. They have a very good defense, but they've been playing without Luke Kuechly for a lot of the season. They required Jared Allen, and then they lost Charles Johnson for a while. A lot of interesting stuff in Carolina. Ron Rivera has done a hell of a job out there. Biggest disappointment for me, it's the team I picked to go to the Super Bowl out of the AFC, and it seems like I have one every year. I warned you guys at the beginning of the season. One team I picked to go to the Super Bowl ends up disappointing. The Atlanta Falcons a couple years ago come to mind. So on and so forth. I can't remember some of the others, but it seems like every year I pick one team that ends up sucking. And that's been the Baltimore Ravens. They can't get out of their own way on offense. I can't believe I picked a team who entrusted their offense to Mark Trestman, but I did. The defense hasn't been good. Terrell Suggs got hurt early in the season. He's been a non-factor because of that, obviously. They missed Pernell McPhee, who's in Chicago. Elvis Dumervil hasn't been able to do as much this year because he hasn't had his running mate with him. Baltimore has just been horrendous all season. I can't explain it. Joe Flacco is a turnover machine still. I thought they'd win enough games in spite of that and figure out a way to get to the Super Bowl because I really like John Harbaugh. I really like that roster. It just hasn't worked out for them. And it's disappointing, and that's my biggest disappointment there. So, Jason, biggest surprise team-wise, biggest disappointment?
Okay, so my biggest surprise is the New York Jets, who sit at 4-2 right now. I mean, I think a lot of us expected when they let go of Rex Ryan. I don't know why it took me a minute to remember his name. How could you possibly forget Rex Ryan? They let go of Rex Ryan. The team just seemed in disarray last year. You had the Geno Smith incident where teammates knocking him in the jaw and at the end of preseason, and there's all sorts of issues. You got a new head coach in Todd Bowles, and not to mention they're the Jets. So, you know, I think they lost their first game. Everybody expected them to not be very good, and they're sitting at 4-2 right now. I mean, they didn't get the win today, but you know they played a good game against the Patriots, who are 6-0 right now, and had an opportunity to get even with the Patriots and try to make a push for this division, although I don't know if anybody's going to overtake New England, but they've certainly surprised. And Todd Bowles has done a great job. He's a defensive coach. He did some great things with the Arizona Cardinals as their defensive coordinator last year, and that team continues to play well on defense this year. So his footprint is still very much here in Arizona. And we'll see what the Jets can do in moving forward. I mean, I don't think they're going to have too many problems with the Dolphins. Who knows what happens against the Bills when they play their former coach. But, you know, they've got a real legitimate chance with the AFC being what it is this year, which is relatively weak to, you know, possibly squeak in as a wild card. So we know that there's certain teams that tend to kind of be dangerous historically if they get into the playoffs. And ironically, two of them reside in New York, the Jets and the Giants. So I'm going to go with the Jets as my surprise. And as far as my disappointment, I kind of have like a tie. I mean, I'm going to skim over my not really my answer and then give my real answer. So my first answer is the Detroit Lions, who are 1-6. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't understand how Matthew Stafford can take the steps backwards that he has. Jim Caldwell, the same head coach as last year. Is Ndamukong Suh and, you know, is he really that impactful? And Nick Fairley, are those two guys really that impactful that they've completely derailed the Detroit Lions? Because they've got Ameer Abdullah, the first-round pick at running back, who's been fantastic out of the backfield. You got Calvin Johnson, who's one of the best receivers in the game. The secondary, I mean, Darius Slay is improving, seems to be getting a little bit better. I can't figure it out. They lost at home today to the Vikings. So the Lions are sitting at 1-6 right now, and I mean they're one or two more losses away from a very early, you know, starting to send their scouts out to prepare for next year. So that's kind of my first pick. But my real actual pick is the Indianapolis Colts, because Jacob, I think you had the Colts as a Super Bowl team, if not a Super Bowl team, like a team that was going to get very far in the playoffs in the AFC, if I'm not mistaken, when we did our preseason show. And I also did as well. I think I had them going all the way to AFC championship game. So maybe it was me and not you. I'm not sure. I don't recall. You'd have to remind me there, but they're not at this point. It's not going to happen. Now, what's ironic is that the Colts, you know, they lost their game today, but at 3-4, which is disappointing for them because, you know, again, we thought they were going to be a Super Bowl contender. So you figure they probably have maybe one or two losses at the most, but at 3-4, they're actually leading their division right now. That division, the AFC South, is so awful. You got the Houston Texans and the Jacksonville Jaguars tied at 2-5, and the Tennessee Titans are in last place at 1-5. So 3-4 is leading that division. So the AFC South, I mean the South division being terrible, has shifted from the NFC last year, where the Carolina Panthers won the division with a not so great record, over to the AFC South, and the Colts are just a mess this year. I'm really disappointed in them. They seem to have kind of given up on the coaching staff there. I really like Chuck Pagano, the things that he's done. He overcame the cancer treatment a couple of years ago, and that team had such a great season when Bruce Arians stepped in and took over. And it just seems like there's a rift between the front office and the coaching staff once again. So it's disappointing because that's typically a pretty stand-up franchise, and I don't know what's going on. Andrew Luck made some terrible throws again today. You know, it was the game that the Colts lost at home. They don't really have their edge at home. They're 1-3 at home right now. They're just kind of a mess. So they've been my disappointment because I think you and I, and again, Jacob, correct me if I'm, I don't remember where you had the Colts falling, but I had them going all the way to the AFC championship game, and I got to renege on that.
I had them there as well, and if I were the Colts, I would fire Chuck Pagano tomorrow. Just get it over with. It's clear they don't want him to be the head coach, and it's clear that the team has kind of given up on that as well. I don't understand why the 49ers blueprint from a year ago seems to be the way that they went, but it was for whatever reason, and Andrew Luck has regressed. There's really no way around it. I picked him to win the league MVP. I'm not going with that. I'm going with Tom Brady now. That brings us to our next part. Is there anything that you want to change as far as midseason? We're going to give a mulligan. You had the Packers over the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I had the Packers over the Ravens. The only thing I'm going to change is the Ravens, and I'm switching that to the Patriots. I struggled to see a team that could beat them in the AFC early in the season, and I struggle even more to see that now, especially if it's in Foxborough. And that looks to be where the AFC playoffs is going to go through. And we were talking about teams earlier that you could maybe see beating them. I just don't trust them to go into Foxborough and win that game. So I got the Packers over the Pats in the Super Bowl. I think the Packers, right now, the road to the Super Bowl would go through Lambeau Field, assuming they can hold off the Carolina Panthers, Atlanta Falcons, among other teams. I think the Packers could go on the road to either one of those places and win that game. I like this Packers team. I've mentioned that. I think they're more well-rounded than teams in recent memory. That's the only thing I'm going to change. So Packers over Pats is my new Super Bowl pick. Jason, you got anything new?
Packers over Pats was my original pick. I'm sticking with that as well. So you and I are broken record. But I got to change my matchup here in the AFC Championship game. So two contenders here that I think are likely to be facing the New England Patriots, because let's face it, it's New England unless Tom Brady's leg falls off. Cincinnati Bengals, Denver Broncos, they're both sitting at 6-0 right now. Based on the history in the playoffs, the way that Andy Dalton has played, the Bengals have played in the playoffs, and their injury history, I'm going to go with the Broncos. I think it's going to be Broncos-Patriots in the AFC Championship. I think New England gets the win, and Peyton Manning is unfortunately not going to get a huge winner, which we don't want to see anyway, because if he goes out a huge winner, that means not only did he beat Tom Brady and the Patriots to get to the Super Bowl, but he potentially beats Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in the Super Bowl, which is not what we want. So I think it's going to be Broncos-Patriots rematch from a couple of years ago. You know, great. One last time, give the world the Brady-Manning matchup that was so incredible when Manning had those great years in Indianapolis. But that's about all I would change so far. I mean, so far it's kind of been what I expected, and even better for the Packers, the big goose egg in the L column.
Yeah. One more Manning-Brady duel for the ages. Even though Peyton Manning clearly has not been the same, I wouldn't argue with that result one bit. So we still like the Packers to be Super Bowl champions after a 6-0 start. Who knew? Which leads us to our preview for next week, and we have time for a prediction here. Break down something small and then kind of go from there against the Denver Broncos. The Packers are going to take on the Broncos on Sunday Night Football next week. That'll be on NBC. It's a 7:30 kickoff. It will be in Denver. Both teams coming off of a bye week. Interesting matchup. The Broncos can rush with four with the best of them. Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, Brian Bulaga, and David Bakhtiari. You've got your work cut out for you. They have very good corners. Chris Harris and Aqib Talib has played well this year. The Broncos' defense is championship level. Offensively, not so much. Peyton Manning has more interceptions than touchdowns this year. He has three more picks than touchdowns, which is weird to say because Peyton just doesn't really do things like that until it's very cold. It's not going to be cold next week, at least not wintry type weather. The Packers are going to have a lot of guys coming back, I think. Obviously, we'll see Wednesday how that goes in terms of practice participation, things of that nature. This is a game I had originally marked as a loss on the schedule, and I'm struggling going back and forth with it right now. But the Denver offensive line isn't very good. The Packers rush the passer. Demaryius Thomas can take the top off of a defense, but I think the Packers can take things like that away. I think that they will do better against underneath routes. And I don't think that they'll be as stagnant in their defense as they were against Phillip Rivers. Morgan Burnett, if he's back, will help with the communication in the secondary, adjustments, things of that nature. I think Mike Daniels can have a big game. I think the pass rush as a whole can have a big game. And I think the Packers are going to score just enough points. I think it'll be a bit of a grind-out kind of game. Broncos don't really let you run or pass on them, but I think the Packers, as they've done all season, will find a way. I like Green Bay 20-17 over the Denver Broncos to go to 7-0 on the season. Jason, Packers or Broncos?
Okay, so this game is going to be everything that we think it is, which is drama-filled, heart attack-laced. I probably shouldn't be tweeting during this game. This is one of those classic games where I should know better than to get on Twitter at all. But you know what's going to happen? I'm going to tweet. So followers out there and listeners, if you happen to be one or both, if you're not following me on Twitter, why not, first of all? If you are following me on Twitter, thank you for being a listener and a follower and for understanding me and who I am. I keep it real, as I like to say. Jacob, you have other words for it. This is not going to be an easy game for the Packers, as you said. You know, even though that they should have an opportunity to get after Peyton Manning, so far, every time this season, the Packers should be doing something, they have a hard time doing it. Last week, everyone expected Green Bay to have 10 sacks of Phillip Rivers because there were three offensive linemen out, and they just weren't going to be able to protect him, and they knew they were going to be throwing it a ton, and they did. Phillip Rivers dropped back and threw the ball 55 times. The Packers, it took them 3.5 quarters to figure out how to get him on the ground. So I don't know that the Packers are necessarily going to have any much more luck getting at Peyton Manning because they just don't seem to be able to do the obvious. But that's just me speaking from a trend standpoint and not looking at any film. The Denver secondary is going to test Aaron Rodgers and these receivers quite a bit. And I think this is where the Packers might run into some problems because you got a cornerback like Chris Harris, you got Aqib Talib, and T.J. Ward back there at safety. These guys are savvy veterans. A couple of rookie wide receivers. You got Ty Montgomery. You got Devontae Adams coming back. Cobb is savvy enough. But this is a game where, you know, you might miss Jordy Nelson a little bit because these guys will sit back and make you pay for every mistake that you make in the passing game. And I don't care if you're Aaron Rodgers, Joe Montana, or Jay Cutler. You're going down if you make a mistake against these guys, and they will pick it off and they will take it back to the house if you're not prepared. So that's one thing that, that the Packers are going to have to be aware of. And, you know, that leads to my next point, which is protection on Aaron Rodgers. Key. He's going to hold on to the ball because these guys are going to have a hard time getting separation against those defensive backs. It's just a fact. And Aaron Rodgers tends to hold on to the ball too long. When guys don't get open, he'd rather take a sack and throw a risky pass and have it get picked off. You can't ask offensive linemen, no matter how good they are, if you're Josh Sitton or David Bakhtiari, to hold a block for 7 seconds while you're waiting for one guy to get enough separation to throw him the ball. So the Packers are going to have to find a way. And maybe they employ the strategy that the Chargers did last week, where it's quick passes, get the ball out. Let's run a slant route or two, because we haven't seen the slant since Brett Favre was a quarterback. And let's be real, that's not an Aaron Rodgers thing. That was a Brett Favre thing all the way. You know, one guy that could have become an unsung hero in this game, and ironically, the last time the Packers played in Denver, which was 8 years ago, it was his rookie season of 2007, and that was James Jones. Jones actually had an amazing catch and run across the middle and beat Champ Bailey to the corner for a touchdown in that game that the Packers ultimately ended up winning in overtime with the bomb from Favre to Jennings that we all remember with Tirico screaming into the microphone. So those are some of my keys. I think it's going to be quick passing, protect Aaron Rodgers, and as far as the defense goes, bend but don't break, because let's be realistic. Demaryius Thomas, you know, he's going to have his way against the Packers. I think one of the things that we all have to hope for is that, you know, Thomas has had some issues with drops this season. Hopefully this is a game where he has quite a few drops for some reason. He's dropped the ball a few times this year. Broncos fans will tell you all day long it's been an issue. So hopefully that trend kind of continues. But the Packers have to try to keep everything in front of them and tighten it up. You know, Peyton Manning can be picked off. He doesn't move around well at all. He's not going to move around well at all, but they've got to find a way to contain him and make it uncomfortable for him to throw. I'm going with a close game as well. For some reason, I see 31-30, and I think this one could come down to the wire. Hopefully it's not a situation where the Packers are having to throw a touchdown pass with 6 seconds a la Miami Dolphins last year, but 31-30, I think the Packers get a gritty, tough win on Sunday night to improve to 7-0, and they take a lot of momentum with them into Carolina the week after.
Packers play two undefeated opponents, assuming the Carolina Panthers hold up their end of the bargain the next 2 weeks. Denver Broncos and then at Carolina, both games on the road. You're going to find out a lot about the character of this team as it goes on. That's going to do it for today's show, though. We will talk to you again after the Packers take on the Denver Broncos next week. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Pulse of the Pack. You can follow me personally at Jacob Westendorf. Jason kind of plugged himself earlier. If you're not following him, well, why the hell not? He's at Jason Perrone. Follow him. Send us questions, comments, concerns, anything you guys want about the show. We appreciate those and are trying to input them as much as possible. We're going to do a few different things next week, so listen out for those. And we'll be happy to implement some new things after the bye week. It is midseason. It'll be November football the next time the Packers play. And everybody knows champions are made in November, December, and January. The kid stuff's over. It's go time now. Green Bay Packers, Denver Broncos. We want to thank our sponsors, Mark Mayfield and Waukesha Sports. We appreciate all you guys do for us. Next week, 7:30 kickoff in Denver. Packers, Broncos, Manning, Rodgers. Can't ask for anything better than that to end your Sunday night. Thank you, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the PAX Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.